All right. Well, it's not often that I get a guest on the show that has a bigger microphone than mine. So watching this, you're...
it's an optical illusion. Get your shades on.
Well, Frederick, I'm excited to welcome you to the podcast and have you here and chat. Yeah, and appreciate all your support in the community and everything that you do in the eye care community, and certainly for our patients with MacuHealth. But I thought we'd get you on and learn a little bit more about the man that is Frederick Jobet.
Oh boy, there you go.
So, for those who don't know you, give us a little brief bio about who you are.
So, born and raised in France, a small village in the middle of the country. Actually, born in Vichy, which most people can put on a map now. Mm-hmm. Went to school there. Went to law school in France. We don't have college there, so that's where I have a 4-year advantage right there, or 5-year, depending on what program you were on. From law school, went to Navy because it was a mandatory service at the time. Did a little more than what most draftees did. And then in 91, I moved to the United States, actually as a professor of law for a law school in Detroit, which turned into going to Michigan Law to get a degree, thinking I was going to return to teaching. And then in my year as a student, I realized I really don't want to be a teacher. So spent about 15 years on Wall Street in different capacities with a couple firms. That brought me to meet inventors and technologies that were requiring or looking for funding. And because some of the funding was a very low first round, it was not fitting the wheelhouse of a big investment banking group like the one I was with. So I was granted the right to do it myself. And here we are, you and I today. That's how MacuHealth started, and a whole bunch of other companies that we have here under this roof.
Very cool. So, and interesting path getting to here, right?
To optometry, yeah. The key is not how you get in. The key is how to get out. I don't think it's possible.
No. Once you're in, it's like quicksand. You get stuck. But it's not a bad place to get stuck.
No, it's a very good place to be.
Yeah. No, we appreciate it. So what really attracted me to this conversation was we were at at an event in Houston at one of the Vision Source Administrator meetings having a drink. And mentioned that one of your favorite books. Yeah, imagine that, right? you mentioned one of your favorite books was also one of my favorite books. And you're the only other person that I've heard bring that up. And that's Relentless by Tim Grover.
Yes. Tim is unbelievable. I mean, if you look at his background, born in England from Indian Sikh parents, mom moved to Chicago first as a nurse. He, his brother, and his dad came. I think he was 5 or 6 to the U.S. His father's credential did not transcribe or translate here. So he was basically working as the cadaver disposal person at a hospital at Northwestern University. And Tim wanted to be a basketball player, didn't, but became the guru of strength and conditioning, both physical and mental, first with Michael Jordan. And I think he did a pretty good job there. And then had people like Kobe Bryant, Dwayne Wade, great players. And the book Relentless is really something people need to read, especially if you're an entrepreneur, and I will qualify independent optometrists as entrepreneurs, because we have a tendency to get comfortable easily and quickly. Mm-hmm. And really, it's all about, as I said, I think that's the line that that grabbed you when we were talking and said, you better learn to be comfortable being uncomfortable. Because this is really where growth starts. And Relentless is a very good way to make people understand that there are a lot of things that need to be done and you're never quite all in. I think my favorite line, which is not in the book by Tim, is meeting with Kobe Bryant, and I mentioned that at my sales meeting. We think we're all in. Mm-hmm. And he goes, even the greatest sometimes don't think they're all in. He goes, it's game six of the fifth championship. They lost. The Lakers lost. There's a game seven coming. And Kobe and Tim Grover meet after the game in the stadium. He goes, it's about 2 o'clock in the morning. And Kobe walks in, sits down next to Tim and goes, man, I threw everything at them but the kitchen sink. And Tim looks at Kobe and goes, what are you saving the sink for? And you know, and that's kind of what we do here at Magic Elf and with the other companies. Don't rest on your laurel. Don't feel satisfied. There's always something else you can do. And I think people sometimes think I'm crazy because we're always bringing new stuff and we're always doing new things. But there's always something we can do better. And it's really fun to try to push it and get to that level and move it and move the needle again.
Yeah. No, that was one of my biggest takeaways from the book as well. I thought I was all in. I read it when I had bought out Dad from the practice. He built a very successful practice. I bought him out and made him an employee and said, hey, this is, you know, I'm putting in time. I've got, you know, 10, 12 hour days into the business. And then reading the book, realized that there's always more. And sometimes more isn't, you know, it isn't possible. Because I wanted to have a family, I wanted to have other things too, but realizing where, you know, just what is possible and where the trade-offs sometimes need to be.
Well, that's what the book is about, really. I mean, where is the balance? The balance is what you make it. Yeah. There is not a right or wrong answer. Not everybody is going to work the way you and I work. Not everybody in the NBA was Michael Jordan. And I would argue that outside of Kobe and maybe Dwayne, I haven't seen another player who was of that tenacity. You know, one of the great lines that I used also at the sales meeting, you know, I asked the team, I say, who is interested in getting their sales and their game to the next level? And everybody will raise their arm. And plagiarizing Tim, the next question is, who is obsessed at doing that? And everybody raised their arms again. And the question is, well, which one is it?
Yeah.
Interested is a hobby. I'm interested in art. I'm obsessed at making this company better, bigger every day.
Nice. What to you, I love that idea. Who's interested in it and who's obsessed with it. What are the key actionable steps that you see within your sales team on those that are interested and those that are obsessed? What makes the difference?
The difference is really the same question, and it varies. I think people... You can't be flying at high octane all the time. I think they're all obsessed at doing the right thing. That's why we have such a great team. I think the difference is, are you willing to look at what you're doing with a critical eye, or are you not interested in looking at it that way because you're afraid of what is going to come out of that? And what I try to teach them is what was taught to me a long time ago, and you read in the book as well, which is, what is the difference between criticism and feedback? Mm-hmm. And the answer is how you receive it. Mm-hmm. And I always tell people, it's what my grandfather used to tell me, he goes, if I take the time out of my day to talk to you and tell you, I think you're not doing it the right way, or I would do it this way, don't take it as an insult or criticism. If I'm taking the time to tell you how I think you should do it, is because I see something in you and what you're doing that can be awesome. And I want to nourish that. I want you to reach that potential. I always tell people, if I don't talk to you, I don't criticize you, I don't give you feedback, whatever you want to take it. Yeah. It means I don't really care about what's going on. The worst thing you can have is me not telling you what I think about what you're doing. Oh, right. And it's really the difference. The difference is the great players, the best players at anything, keep on practicing until they don't get it wrong. Mm-hmm. Where everybody practices to try to get it right.
Yep.
You know, and you'll see guys, I mean, God bless his soul, great player, great cleaner, Kobe. take the same jump shot 3,000 times to see if he's landing the same way on the same spot. That's being obsessed at being better. Yeah. It's not easy. And again, it goes back to one thing that I preach all the time with my kids or with everybody. It's nobody really cares about you, how you feel. What's your discipline? I can tell you, when it's time to get up in the morning, it doesn't matter if you're part of SEAL Team 6 or part of Delta House at college. Nobody really wants to get out. That pillow feels good. The difference between one and the other is one has the discipline to say, I'm up, let's go. The other hits the snooze button. And I did that. I don't have my phone and calculator here, but you can do the math at home. I always ask that question when I speak, especially when I speak to high schools or kids. How many of you hit the snooze button this morning? All right. How many times did you hit it? And on average, it's 2 times. So that's 20 minutes right there. And I just asked them to do the math. So it's 20 minutes times 5 days a week. That's 100 minutes. Time 52 weeks a year. Time 40 years. You just spent, I think it's 300 days like this. That sounds like a massive waste of time to me. Yeah. And when you put it in that perspective, people start to realize, oh, yeah, those 8 minutes or those 10 minutes of snooze add on. Mm-hmm. And unless you tell me that you get a credit or a refund on the back end and you get them back when you need them, which I know it's not the case, they're wasted. They're gone.
Yep. Can't get time back.
No. So, precious commodity.
Absolutely. And what I found is the reason when I was hitting snooze was because I spent time in bed before just scrolling through social media. And so I was tired because I was wasting time on the front end. I wasn't scheduling. I didn't have that discipline to just turn everything off and go to sleep.
I'm glad you said that. I thought you were going to blame me for keeping you late at the bar after an event.
No. Those are my good choices. I love the feedback part. I think it's interesting too, because feedback's a gift. We don't have to always accept it. I think we need to hear it, but we don't always have to accept it, right? We need to internalize it and take what's good for us. I'm reminded of my favorite Michael Jackson song, starting with The Man in the Mirror. And I think how many of us are afraid of the man in the mirror, right? I'm afraid to look at what really is there.
That's the one that knows best.
Well, it's the one that knows best, but it's also the one you can't lie to.
Yeah.
You can lie to everybody else, but you can't lie to the man in the mirror. And sometimes
you also, one thing to add with feedback, you have to be able to gauge who is providing you with feedback. You need to have that emotional intelligence that shows, okay, well, Aaron really doesn't have to give me feedback. He's a successful entrepreneur. He's giving me feedback. So that's positive feedback. That's somebody who really doesn't have a dog in a race. Mm-hmm. And is providing you feedback to try to make you better. The other side of that equation is what back home my grandfather used to call anchors. You have people around you, we all have them, who are petrified of your success because they have the same basis, the same background, the same opportunities, the same terrain, but they're not interested in doing anything. And the only way they feel good is that if nobody gets better because they don't look bad versus that person. So their job is to pull you down, which is what an anchor does. And you have that feedback you can ignore all day because that's a negative feedback to make sure that you don't get better. The one you want to absorb and analyze is the one that tells you, hey, you're here, but I think if you were doing this, you could be here. Yep. That's good feedback.
That's good. And how do you tell the difference when both feedbacks feel critical?
Consider the source. The source is important. People, we all know who doesn't want us to succeed. They won't tell you overtly, but everybody knows inside. Yeah, they don't really want to add. A gut-wrenching question asked by a young kid in high school who asked me, well, what if the people doing that are your parents? Mm. That's a tough one to answer, but it happens.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily that they're bad parents. It could be just they're petrified that that kid is going to become something that they never were and never thought because they never had the opportunity possibly. And is going to walk away, not realizing this is somebody who is going to lift everybody with you. So it's hard. You have to figure out what the feedback and who the feedback comes from.
Yeah, that is tough. And it's interesting. I sent my kids to Spanish immersion school. And so they didn't hear anything but Spanish from kindergarten till third grade. The number one reason that kids pulled out of the program was because it made the parents uncomfortable. So the kids were learning the language.
I can
They couldn't speak. The parents couldn't help with their homework. But that was the number one reason when kids left within the first 3 years is parents pulled them because it made them feel uncomfortable, which.
Oh, now the kids.
Really the kids. No, the kids were fine. They don't know.
Oh, now the kids can talk about the parents and the parents don't understand.
Well, it was funny. The shirts they sold to raise money was my kids talk back in three languages.
Yeah.
English, Spanish, and then they had a little bit of Mandarin. But
that's awesome. That's a good base right there.
It's fun. So yeah, my kids and I argue in Spanish now when we get into little fights. But it just the fear of success is really interesting, and it almost sounds like an oxymoron. But I'm sure you see it. I see it in working with practices. I'm sure you see it working with practices as well.
Well, it goes back to what you and I spoke about earlier. It goes back to people are comfortable being comfortable. And you need to think about being uncomfortable is not a bad thing. And in optometry, it's almost, I'm an outsider to optometry, okay? I've been here 14 years almost in the optometry business. But I'm still an outsider. I'm not an OD. I'm not an eye expert. I am not an optician. I'm not a tech. What amazes me is when I have conversation with guys like you or with Harvey or with Keith, and I hear things that happened before I got involved with optometry. The two or three that just amuse me because it's a good reminder to tell independent optometrists, especially, to not be comfortable. So I didn't know until Keith told me that 30 years or so ago, if I wanted to buy a pair of sunglasses, going to an optometrist was not the place to go buy a pair of sunglasses, which is mind-boggling for a business guy like me. I'm like, wait, you are in a business of vision. Why don't you sell great sunglasses? So it had to be brought back in. Yep. I think Harvey told me that first contacts came in. A lot of optometrists thought it was absolute BS and it was just for prima donna who were not interested in wearing glasses, which is... Look at it today. It's laughable because this is one of the biggest sources of revenue that you have in optometry. I think it's Carl Spear who told me that when OCT came in, people thought it was the end of optometry. And now if you don't have one, I don't even know how you practice optometry.
Yeah.
So this is kind of what we use for supplementation. Why not do supplements? I have the same communications with doctors when I hear a conversation about, well, you know, in Louisiana, now they can't do surgery. How is that possible? Well, this is why it is possible. If you look at the next 10 years, the net growth of ophthalmologists in America will be 19. In 10 years, we're going to add 19 doctors, net. Dead, retired, 19. It means that I think a retina specialist will have 7 million patients in America per.
That's crazy.
So who is going to do the surgeries? And I know there's a lot of fighting and interfighting between MDs and ODs, but we were looking at something yesterday with my team. There are 525 counties in America that don't have an eye doctor, don't have an optometrist.
Say that again.
525 counties don't have an optometrist.
That's crazy.
It's insane. In Texas, it's almost 1 million souls. In Florida, it's 400,000.
Wow.
So there's an amazing amount of room to grow. There's an amazing amount of medical services optometry can do, but you have to go out of that very comfortable zone that says, hey, exam, refraction, glasses, sunglasses, bye. Because Warby Parker does that. Mm-hmm. I don't go to the mall very often. I had to go buy a dingle for this podcast room. And across Apple at the posh mall here in my town, there's a Warby Parker. Now they are brick and mortars. I don't know if they make any money, but they're there. And I always ask ODs, I say, okay, I need glasses. Are you sending me to Warby Parker? I said, well, no, I need contacts. Do you send me to 1-800-CONTACTS? No. So why are you sending me to the pharmacy to buy supplements?
Yeah.
70% plus of the supplements there don't have inside the box what they claim to have. And B, why are you sending him over there? And I think the biggest thing that I see, and I had that conversation at a dinner that my team hosted here in Detroit with a group of optometrists. And I took my example. So 5 years or so ago, you're going to laugh. It's typical me. Jump over a dock to run to the car to get to the golf club. Shattered my left ankle. And I said, when I went to the orthopedic surgeon and we did an x-ray and we figured out the fibula was broken, the orthopedic surgeon said, we have two ways to solve that problem. We can do surgery, put screws and plates, put it in place. Very likely you won't have arthritis. Or we can reduce the fracture. His joke was, the great thing about my job, if you put two bones in the same room, they'll find each other. It's going to take 3 months for you to get back to walking properly. You very likely will have arthritis. There was never a third choice that was, or you can go to CVS and get it wrapped. And I think what really surprises me with some of your colleagues is that when I'm in front of you for my eyes and for my vision, don't think with my wallet. Don't think with, I wonder what Frederick is going to be okay doing. Tell me what the problem is. Tell me what the options are. Yep. With confidence. Give me the choice. Tell me, Frederick, you have small drusen in the back of your eyes. We need to put you on a supplement. I need to see you in 6 months.
Yeah.
Because we're there to get that advice. If you tell me go to the pharmacy, I'm going to take the cheapest product that has what you told me was needed, which very likely means I'm getting nothing.
Yep.
And I always joke that the D stands, you know, D still stands for doctor. So be that doctor. Your patient is actually looking for you to make that call, to tell them what to do. And that's, again, moving from that comfort zone of, yeah, you know, you can go to the pharmacy. Whew. I don't have to make that call anymore. To make that call.
Yep.
Aaron, you need Matthew Elf. You're going to come out. Bob is outside. He's going to show you how to do it. On we go. I see you in 6 months. That's proper optometry. And that's getting out of that comfort zone of just doing something, which is pretty much commoditized now, which is refraction and lenses.
Yep. No, I agree 100%. And talking about getting out of your comfort zone, the last year we brought in Life Meter, and I am happy to freely to admit that up until that point, I had really pigeonholed the nutrition conversation to patients that had drusen or early macular degeneration or beyond that, which is silly because patients come to me and I would stand on a pulpit and say they come because they want their best health. It's my or best vision. It's my job to give them their best vision, but I kept a lot of those tools hidden until things got bad. And then I wasn't treating good vision. I was trying to save vision.
Now you're halfway to the ophthalmologist.
Right. right? I don't want to see you until you're sick. I don't take care of healthy people, which is the exact opposite of what we chose to claim. But it was really interesting when we started taking skin carotenoid tests at the front desk when everybody checked in, the world that opened up and the conversations that we had. And
yeah,
you know, just patients weren't coming in expecting to have that conversation, because as an industry, as a profession, we've taught them, you come to me for glasses and contacts, right? Mm-hmm. And that's it. We don't have any other conversations, which is sad, but I think that there's no one else to blame but ourselves. And secondly, when we did have those conversations with people, you know, there's tons of athletes that want to see better. There's tons of individuals who were taking a supplement, and when their readings are really low, we can have a discussion about, you know, hey, is what's in the bottle really in the bottle? You know, just because you eat a specific diet one way or another doesn't mean that you're getting what you need from it. And so it opened up a whole lot more discussions for us and really improved that conversation that we had with the patients. And I think the best thing we did is I moved a lot of that out of the exam room and into my team. When I go to the doctor.
That's what I see. I mean, I look at it not as a doctor. I look at it as a businessman. And I have had that conversation with many of our customers at MatchYourHealth when they say, well, I can't keep staff. And it's true. I mean, there are a lot of people who will vagabond and move around because they get another dollar per hour or something like mm-hmm. this. And what I tried to explain is that every time you have to replace somebody, and that's an equation, you can Google it. It is absolute gold. It costs you 1.52 the salary or the compensation of the person who left, because you have to take time out of your day. That's time that you're not being paid. You got to put an ad. That costs money. You have to do interviews. You got to do second interviews. Mm-hmm. Well, where if you really look at it, the good staff member that you just lost left because somebody gave them $2 more than you were giving them. Now, you involve your staff as a team and you work as a team and you bring supplementation for vision. They're going to do the life meter like they do it at your place. What do you say? 70% of the time you have a god-awful number?
Yeah.
All right. We're not even talking about average here. We're talking about amazed you're able to see the door of the house when you left this morning. Yeah. Yeah. So 70%, which allows you, if it's really bad, maybe to do an OCT or to do a contrast sensitivity or a dark adaptation. And then they are in your chair. I mean, now you can start asking questions that you know almost 100% what the answer is going to be. You know, do you have problems driving at night? Do you have blurry vision? Do you get eye strain? Okay, well, this is what we see. Frederick, we need to get you on this product. Now we're going to get you to Aaron or to Susie or to Bob. They are going to show you. Look at what happens with contacts. Mm-hmm. So I'm a lucky guy. I only have these guys since mid-50s. I can still see very clearly, but both my kids had contacts from the start. And I saw them at their eye care professional. You need contacts. We have some samples. Ares, Susie was going to show you how to put them in, how to take them out, how to take care of them. You don't do that.
No.
Let's do the same thing with supplementation. Frederick, you need to be on MatchYourHealth. This is what MatchYourHealth looks like. Take this. It's a glass of water. It's easy to take. This is your first 6 months. We want to see you back in 6 months. We're going to do a life meter. We're going to show you that that has improved. Make sure you take it every day with one of your meals. You're going to have happy patients. There's nothing worse than somebody who has 20, 10, 15, or 20 after correction on the black and white 100% contrast board that I had to memorize in the Navy, or he didn't go down. So I used to do that with a former colleague of yours here, Lloyd Snyder. I used to drive him nuts because I could read the chart right to left, left to right. I mean, it didn't matter. Just tell me how you want to read it. But they are not happy because they either have night vision issues, glare issues, blurriness issues that we all can solve. Dry eye, floaters, name it. Those are functions that are impairing their vision. And that's the job of the optometrist, to give me the best possible vision I have. Include your staff in there. Doesn't matter what you do. If you spiff them per bottle, if there is a formulation for a bonus at the end, you're going to see that it's about a $6 or $7 per hour or more. And there is no competitor that can steal that gem you have, because you pay more because of what you do and how you do it. But again, now you got to get out of that comfort zone and embrace that model. And we can help. We can definitely show people what can be done.
Absolutely. Well, two thoughts and two comments. The first is, when I go to my doctor, I see the doctor, but I'm really seeing the whole entire healthcare team. I've never had a doctor, draw blood. I've never had a doctor insert an IV in me. I've never had a doctor. I've had them set a bone when I had a good fracture, but they've never put the cast on. They've never taken the cast off. I certainly haven't ever had them run a diagnostic test. Right. And, in fact, I laugh when people say, I want the doctor to, put the IV in. I hear that, because he probably hasn't done it in 15 years.
Yeah.
But I want,
and he wasn't that good by then.
No. Right. I want the team taking care of me. I want the doctor for the brain. Yeah. Right. The analytics. But even still, I go to the hospital. Some of the ER nurses are, I'll put toe to toe against the ER doctors all day long, because they've seen it, they know what to do. So having that healthcare team, I believe, is critical. And I think that's one area where we have lots of work still to do in optometry. I think we put the doctor on a pedestal too much and separate them from the team, where I try to really have the patients come and see the practice. It doesn't matter what doctor is seeing them, they're seeing the team. And so getting them all up to speed, having them be part, educating them, certainly helps, at least with us, with retention. And we pay them for what they do, right? So when you're producing a better product, we can pay you a whole lot more. So I think that's important. The second is, and I'm going to nod my hat to Chris Wolf. Too often in optometry, and I was taught this way, that the comprehensive eye exam, the annual eye exam, was the end all be all, right? That was what you were focused for.
Yeah.
And Chris flipped that with his total patient care model and says, no, that's the door to get into the practice, right? That's the door to where we're finding the problems to really start taking care of you. Whether you've got a low carotenoid score, and I've got to now look to see, is that a precursors to some early macular degeneration if we don't take care of you? Are there changes in your nerve? And I've got to now start looking at you for glaucoma. Do you have dry eye that we need to start taking care of you? And whatnot. And I think that as we start learning more, because I've got a sneaky suspicion that we're going to start seeing some even more neurological markers within the eye, we're going to be able to start testing those. Yeah. But if we can't manage the stuff we're managing now, we're not going to be able to manage the new
You're going to be drowning. Yeah. It's going to be quicksand. Yeah.
Right.
No doubt there. It's, and you speak about something that there's a term out there that I understand what it stands for. I don't like it, and I'll tell you why I don't like it, and I think you will agree with me. It's called medical optometry.
Yeah.
And the reason why I don't like it is because it implies that, to me at least, it implies that if you don't do that, you're not a doctor. You are a doctor. I mean, I was very involved in the Florida battle with that person. They don't want optometrists to call themselves physicians. Mm-hmm. You are a doctor. You are a medical doctor to me. And I know I'm not going to make friends in the ophthalmology group doing that, but you are. You see, you're the front line as an optometrist. You're the front line of vision in this country.
Yep.
You need to bring those. I like what Chris calls it, that total.
Total patient care.
Total patient care, because this is what it is. You're a medical expert, but you have to do the whole work, the whole job. You can just pick the easy part that you have done in school. And I think schools of optometry also have to evolve and do something like this and add more of those classes.
Yes.
And increase the percentage of passing too.
Yeah. It's interesting. I get fourth year students, and because I despise that term as well, medical optometry, and yeah. they'll I'll ask them what they're interested in, and they say, "Well, I'm interested in medical optometry," and I said, "That doesn't exist here. We do optometry. What I don't do is I'm not a refractionist, right? I don't just do the refraction and say I'm done. I practice optometry, and so to me, medical optometry is an oxymoron."
But you know, one thing that's very interesting, because you can tell that the roots and the will and the knowledge is absolutely present in optometry. The willingness and the hope of doing the right thing is absolutely present. And I'll give you an example. And you have seen a rendition of it. We're going to come up in Orlando with easy to use version of the calculator. So what we have done is we took data from NIH, data from Vision Console, data from CDC. We regrouped that in a algorithm to figure out, okay, if we have Dr. Varner's office and we analyze that practice, what are the different conditions that we are going to see in his practice? So we take an example, for example, 2,000 active patients per year. Mm-hmm. And then you drop down that number, you hit enter, the system does its magic and segments your population, your 2,000 patients, into what the average population in this country suffers from. So you start on the far disease side, with macular degeneration, with a partial loss of vision already. Mm-hmm. And it's about 1%. Then you have patients diagnosed with macular degeneration. That's about 15%. And then you have at-risk population for macular degeneration, and that's 18%. And if you just stick to those three categories, and you ask, as I've done many times already this year, a group of optometrists in front of you, okay, show of hands, scream some numbers. People who have actual vision loss, loss of vision lines, whatever the impairment is from macular degeneration, how many of those people are you going to put on Matthew Elf? And everybody screams 100%, which is... Mm-hmm. Amusing, because the reason why they are there is that nobody did anything. And they are very likely already getting injections. So then I ask them the same question with diagnosed and at risk, 100%. And then I show them what the revenue would be if they were doing supplements at 100% clip for those three categories. And I've asked, do you guys get that every year? And they're shocked. And they realize they don't even ask the question. And the gap between people like you and many doctors we have embracing that model and those who are still uncomfortable thinking, well, I'm selling supplement. No, you're prescribing a solution. Mm-hmm. You're not selling contacts. You're prescribing contacts or lenses. And then we need to move in that comfort zone of, I am the professional. I have a science-based solution that I'm going to prescribe to my client for that person to get better.
Yep.
That's the comfort zone that we need to get out of.
Well, I'm just looking at this, and let's make the math real easy and say there's only, you do 1,000 comprehensive eye exams a year, right? That's probably half as many as most practices do at minimum, but it makes the math easy. So if you have 1,000 comprehensive eye exams, and I added up those numbers that you shared, 1% with VA loss, 15% with early AMD, and 18% with at risk. That's 34. So I'll round it down to 30%, right? So 1,000 times 30% is 300.
Time four.
Right? And then even just bringing them back to follow up, just bringing them back to do a good job, because the comprehensive eye exam is not where you should be managing all of this. You diagnose the problem, mm-hmm. you bring them back. At a level 3 visit, average of $90, that's $27,000 a year, right? Yeah. You haven't sold them anything. You've just
The right thing.
That's not adding in OCTs or visual fields or anything else. You're just taking an extra step to take care of them, which they appreciate because that's why they walked in the front door to begin with. And so I don't think that it's I mean, it helps financially, but it's doing the right thing. When you do the right thing.
Well, everything we do needs to be rooted in doing the right thing first. Yeah. Okay. And it's really what the oath is as an optometrist. You need to use, you took it. I hear it once in a while at the Optometry Association when they recite it, especially in Florida. I really love it because it almost sounds like the ethos that we had in the Navy, which is, you know, I will use everything in my toolbox to achieve my mission. It's basically what you have to do here. You have to use everything in your knowledge to make my vision better. So that's doing nothing on the supplement. You had 27,000. Mm-hmm. Let's say you do 50%. You convince 50% of those 1,000 patients to adopt a supplement. And we're just going to say supplement. We're not going to make a MyQHealth commercial. Yep. We're going to say a supplement. And most supplements are going to be 3 months bottle. So it's four. Yep. So you have 500 times four. You had 2,000. Put an average of $70 per bottle. That's how much money is left on the table doing the right thing.
That's 140,000.
It is.
Yeah.
And that's at 50%, not talking to anybody who has dry eye, floaters, visual performance issues, young athletes who are squinting because their macular pigment is terrible, because we assume because they are young, they have good macular pigment. I think I told you the story. I won't say his name.
Yep.
Worst ever measured macular pigment was a first draft pick in the NFL.
Discovering the impact of Life Meter this year has been truly transformative for motivating my patients with macular degeneration to embrace carotenoid supplements. With this non-invasive device, we can now quantitatively show that supplements are working. Life Meter assesses carotenoid concentration in the skin, reflecting fruit and vegetable intake, and indicating levels in other vital tissues like the retina and brain. Supported by over 30 peer-reviewed publications, Life Meter's accuracy, consistency, and effectiveness have been validated in 2,000 subjects of varying background. What's more, it offers the flexibility to prescribe the best-suited products for each patient. My patients love knowing their numbers and witnessing improvements in as little as a month. Better yet, compliance with carotenoid supplements has surged, doubling our sales of MacuHealth since the Life Meter's implementation. As doctors of optometry, we cannot do what we do without our team. And para-optometrics are allied health professionals who assist us in providing the highest level of vision care to our patients. We at iCode Education want to support you and your team in the para-optometric certification process, which is why not only do we have resources available, training resources available for your team to help prepare them for the test, but we also have a discount code specifically for the Aaron Werner podcast listeners, which gives you $100 off for 12 months. So you can use the code AWP2024, that's AWP2024, to get $100 off for a 12-month code. We'll put the link in the show notes, but you can visit iCodeEducation.com and search for para-optometric training to see what those courses are like.
That's the kid who looks at Jim Stringham, our chief scientific officer, and say, I hate to drive at night. And Jim's reaction was brilliant. He said, you're not supposed to say that for another 40 years.
Yeah.
Well, he's saying it now, and he has to play on Sunday.
That's crazy. But they don't know unless somebody tells them.
Yes. And what we do. That's why the team is phenomenal. They educate, they take the time, they visit doctors, they have dinners. We're obviously big sponsors of optometry podcasts like yours and events because the word has to come out. And it sounds a bit silly for me to say that, but it's true. I would rather you take, as a doctor, that you pick a supplement of one of my competitors that are actually doing a good thing, which is have inside the box what they say they have. that do nothing.
Yeah.
Obviously, I would rather you use ours because we're the best.
Yeah.
But do something. Get on with something and do it at the office. That's the one thing that we never speak about. There's that thought process of, well, you know, I'm going to push it on back to the company and do a subscription. And again, we're trying to do the best, especially for independent optometry. You can ask Keith, you can ask me, we would make a lot more money on the subscription platform. Eventually, your client is never going to enter their code. They're going to come to us, or they're going to go on Amazon, and you lost the patient as a supplement client. Keep it inside the practice. Involve your team. Make it a full medical experience, a total vision experience. And the patients will just follow you because they're going to feel better. They're going to see better. And that's what the business is about. This is about getting better vision for people.
Absolutely. Well, and that quarterly cycle or every 6 month cycle, if you sell them two bottles, really ties in with the medical visits and the management visits anyway, yeah. Because you want to test with them and follow up with them. And what I really love with the Life Meter is now we've got a trackable number score.
That was and an accurate number.
And an accurate number, yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's why it took me so long to bring a machine forth. When I started 14 years before, the two inventions that I had secured were Matthew Health, and the other one was a Flicker photometer. And I remember vividly two things about that thing. The first is when I was asked to take the first exam, and Dr. Snyder's instruction were, there's a flicker that never stopped flickering. I want you to tell me when it stopped flickering. All right, that's a very interesting piece of advice. I think I was 44 at the time with perfect vision. I said, I would love to know what type of results we're going to get with elderly people. And then when we put it through science and we sent it to Waterford, to Professor Nolan, and then Professor Beatty, Nolan called me and he goes in a very Irish way, and I won't butcher his accent. He says, my toaster gives me a more accurate number than your machine. And that was the end of the Magiscope. I was just like, you can't sell that. So Flicker photometry, it's doable if you are a professor like Professor Bernstein or Professor Johnson, Professor Nolan, because you have 35 minutes with me. You can't do it until you get it right. In a clinical setting, it doesn't work.
No. No, we need something, good, accurate, quick, and
fast, because you don't have a lot of time.
Nope, we don't have a lot of time. And then something that's simple enough for everyone to understand. I think I've also learned that the more complex I make something, the harder it is for patients to engage, which is why.
Yeah, here they get a number. And what's funny is when you have two people at a show coming that are from the same practice and they're taking the exam one after the other, and one gets a 400, the other one gets 150, you can see it's on now. I'm going to beat you next time. And it's good because that competition is actually a competition to be healthier.
Absolutely. It's a great number. One of my favorite things is when, because we, it comes with a little card that we write their number on. It has the graph. And so patients have had a chance to look at it. And a good number of the time, they've already, have a bottle of MacuHealth in their hand or in their purse because my front desk has done a good job of educating on it. But I look at them and I say, oh, you're average. How does it feel to be average?
Yeah, nobody wants to hear that.
Nobody wants to be high. You can just see the blood kind of drain. Yes. Say, well,
I dare you, doctor. Let me show you.
Yeah. If you don't want to be average, I can help you. If you're so super happy being average, that's on you. And, so we can educate, we can talk about, but I try to make it real and have some fun with it, but help them get out of their comfort zone too, circling back to how we started.
Right? Absolutely.
We got to get out of our comfort zone, but if I want patients to change, I have to challenge them to get out of their comfort zone.
There is an education part here where they will tell you what, $75 is too expensive. Mm-hmm. And I always tell doctors, I say, well, $75 for 90 days, that's 88 cents a day. Do you know a coffee shop in a neighborhood that I don't know of that sells 88 cents coffee? Because I guarantee you spend 10 times that a day in coffee.
Yeah.
and put it in perspective. Now it's a choice. The one thing that the lawyer in me needs to address, because I've heard that again when I was up north this weekend. I was talking to an optometrist over a cocktail, and he's telling me we're talking about the same things that we're talking about here. And I said, you know, the other part is we live in a very litigious society, and people eventually, and have already started to look at optometrists and say, well, Frederick went blind of macular degeneration. What was Dr. Varner doing? And he looks at me and he goes, well, I'll defend that all day. I said, all right, time out. There's a couple of things that need to be addressed as far as optometry and lawsuits are. You're represented, the person who comes to defend the malpractice is from the insurance company. They represent the insurance company, not you. And the ball game here is, how can we get out of this the faster and the cheapest possible without having to go to court? Because what the doctor was telling me, he goes, well, I'll defend that in front of a court of law. You never will.
Court. Yep.
And really, this is where optometry meets Wall Street. We used to say, if you give that advice to Aaron, but you did not document it, timestamp it, and nail record, you never give that advice. Mm-hmm. So you have patients who are going to say, nope, not doing that. In their client record, it has to say recommended Matthew Health or recommended supplement for vision provided this solution refused. Because when something happens, you have done your job. And not doing it, I think, is exposing the profession to risk, because eventually, if you look at 15% with AMD, 18% at risk, we're looking, as you said, a 30% of our population of a problem. That's where lawyers look at an era of opportunity.
Absolutely. And I'll take that a step further. I early in my career, I remember a wonderful elderly lady. She's since passed on, but, you know, had drusen. And I said all the right things. I did all the right things. I've gone back and looked at the notes, and I did document everything. But if I'm honest with myself and everybody listening, I don't think I pushed and challenged her and her family enough in the exam room. And I saw her frequently. It progressed, and we ended up having to send her to retina for injections. At the time, I truly believed I did everything I could. Now I know that I really think I could have, almost to the point of challenging, to where I'm offensive, to help them understand the gravitas of the situation and what could happen, because they ultimately found out it was just too late. And that's one of those cases that I don't think I'll ever really truly get over, because in hindsight, I didn't think that I truly did everything I could. The family was wonderful, and they were gracious and whatnot.
Now you find them in the line of fire, because genetically they are in that 18% at risk.
Oh yeah, and they are there. I'm very bullish on that now. I will say that one experience though has made a huge difference for a lot of others, because I learned and grew from it. I'm happy to share that experience. Hopefully nobody else has to have the same one. They can learn from this young, or, you know, this lady and my experience. But I think that there is some challenging, there is some, you know, needing to be uncomfortable to help people sometimes. And with the tools we have now, you know, being able to give them a number, being able to test contrast, and in addition to showing them their retina, there's not a whole lot of excuse.
I've said that many times. To me, the optometrist is almost, if they have not replaced a general practitioner, they are pretty darn close to be on the same level, because you have the ability of the tools we have and the tools that are coming to detect disease before they happen. Mm-hmm. and really be the front line of helping patients, not only with vision, but with brain health, with diabetes. There's so much optometry can do if they are doing things the right way. And again, you need to get out of that comfort zone. This is where good things happen.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's a great point to end on. Frederick, I really appreciate the time. And
I'm going to leave you with one line that I got a couple days ago, which I love, and that applies to what we talked about. The magic you're looking for is hiding in the work you're ignoring.
Ooh, say that again.
The magic that you are looking for is hidden by the work that you're ignoring. People always find that magic pill, that magic thing, that do the work, put the motions, put the work in, get through the motions, get it done. There is no magic that happens if you don't put the effort. So that magic that you are wishing for is really just in the work that you're not doing. Just do the work and the magic comes in.
That's awesome. Sounds like
I got moments.
Put up my wall.
None of that stuff is from me, but I'm good at regurgitated.
Hey, if you can't steal good, what can you do?
Appreciate that.
Absolutely. No, thank you, Frederick. Really
thank
appreciate
you.
Thank all
you
the support me. And what you do for the industry, how you support us, and I look forward to next time we're catching up.
Looking forward to. Have a good day.